bar psi I plus psi bar I del w psi bar upper I minus some go like that. Now, so
well, I also
so in this two-dimensional system with this Lagrangian, I wanted to introduce the Lax matrix, and in this particular case, the Lax matrix was built from the currents. So here's the reminder on how to build a current. I think this is I wrote down the wrong index last time. So this system has UN. The system is UN symmetry. So introduce a background gauge field. Which means we replace derivatives by covariant derivatives with this background gauge field for this group UN. And the current, we let once we introduce a background gauge field, we have a Lagrangian, which is a function of psi, psi bar, and of the background gauge field. All we've done, the A dependence will appear by replacing these derivatives by covariant derivatives. Then we set J I J of W be the derivative A J I of W bar.
Like, we have to reverse the indices
here because it's on the bottom. So we change. That makes sense that this is kind of dualized. Okay.
So
we just vary the action with respect to the background gauge field. Look at what we get, and then set the background gauge field to zero. And that's the current. Yeah.
Why do we raise and lower indices?
In this example, because I've taken the symmetry group to be, say, UN or GLN, we're not going to be raising or lowering these indices at all.
Psi I and psi I with upper or lower, are they just the same?
They're independent. Psi I lower and psi I upper are independent fields. Yeah. There are other examples where we do raise and lower indices, but not this one. Because that would break the symmetry group we're using.
Sorry, can I
start
putting
the microphone down a little bit lower?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. So I'm mentioning this because this is a universal, this is always how one should calculate the current, and it's a useful formula. Okay, so in this case, we find that J I J of W is psi I, psi j psi I, w bar is psi and we set the Lax matrix. The Lax matrix is just some multiple of the currents. The Lax matrix also has two components, it's a multiple of the currents. What else? It might also be easier, sometimes useful, instead of using W and W bar coordinates, to use X and Y coordinates. Let me go over here. So. Where W is X plus IY. We have JIJ of X is half of JIJW plus JIJW bar, and JIJ of Y is equal to minus 1 over 2i. Square root of minus 1. Okay. And similarly for the Lax matrix can be written in terms of jijx and jijy. Okay. As we said last time, the Lax matrix satisfies a certain equation. But the currents are conserved. So I'd just like to write out, just so we understand what's going on.
Kevin?
Yeah?
Is the Z like the Z in the R matrix? Like,
yes.
Just another thing. It's not the...
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one.
It's just some other... The Lax matrix depends on some parameter, which is why we'll get infinitely many conserved currents. So at the moment, this doesn't really have any physical... It's just a parameter. Okay. So everybody knows currents are conserved.
Yeah.
Firstly, the current J is conserved. So the equation for any current to be conserved is that del X J I J X plus del Y Jijy equals 0. Okay, so if we write this equation in the W and W bar coordinates. If we were in Lorentzian signature, W and W bar would be null coordinates along the light cones, and we're just doing some kind of boost to this. When we change coordinates, in these coordinates, it looks like del W bar Jijw plus del W Jijw bar equals 0. Oh, this is the one that doesn't move.
Just the front board doesn't work.
What's that?
The board does work.
I think this one is. I think the one that would be here is behind there. Anyway, I'll go over here instead, just for now. Yep. I think it would be easier if they just had some like string or something. So this equation, this always holds. For any current. So it's not really a very interesting equation. The interesting equation is the other one, the Lax equation, which you wrote on last time. And it looks deceptively similar to the equation for having a conserved current, but there's some different signs and different factors. So let's write out the Lax equation in the xy coordinates. It's going to be del y L I J Z X minus del X L I J Z of Y plus L I K Z Y L A J Z X and then minus L I K Z X L J Z Y. This is equal to zero. So in the WW bar coordinates, it takes this form, L W L Z W bar, I'll write it out in a bit of shorthand, minus del W bar LZ W plus some kind of LZ W L Z W bar term. I didn't write all the terms in full detail, but they're just like these ones. So the thing you notice is if you compare this equation, the xy coordinates, we're taking the x component of the Lax connection and differentiating with the sector y over there. And here we're taking the x component of the current and differentiating with it to x. So the equations are a little different. If we write it in these coordinates, here we're taking the w bar component differentiating with respect to w. That's also what's happening here, but the signs are different. So because of the Lax connection is just some simple linear combination of the currents, we can use this conservation equation, if you want, to get rid of one of these terms, to get a different factor in this term. Let's simplifies it a little bit. Okay. So the next thing I want to explain is why the presence of this Lax connection leads to an infinite number of conserved charges in your system. So what we can write out is the monodromy matrix, which is the analog in the setting of the monodromy matrix we studied in the discrete setting. So we have x and y, and we'll treat now y as time. We'll define monodromy matrix. It's not really a matrix, sort of a matrix. This will be a conserved charge M I J of Z. Since we have a family of conserved charges, which will be a function of Z, we will have this infinite number of conserved charges that we want to suggest some integrability. So the formula I'm going to write down something which depends on x, depends on a value of y, but we'll see its y derivative will be 0, which is why it's conserved. So 1 plus the integral from x equals minus infinity to infinity of Lij z. This is a function of x and y, and I take the x component plus here we're going to do an integral over two points, x1 and x2, where x1 is less than x2. Lij z is evaluated at x1, y, the x component, evaluated at x2, y, take x component and dx1, dx2, and as keeps on going. And I'll write the general term. We integrate over n ordered points. And then I take an ordered product of these Lax operators, one at each point. Lik1, z, x1, y, x. Lk1, 2, z, x2, y, x, lkn minus 1, j, z, x, n, y, x component, dx1, dx. So this is a rather long formula. Let's take a moment to parse it. So firstly, have you guys seen something similar before when you studied the path-ordered exponential of a gauge field? That's what we're doing. We're pretending x is a gauge field and writing down the path-ordered exponential. Oops. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot that the top one doesn't work. Okay, go over here. Firstly, we recall L is an expression in psi and psi bar, some quadratic expression in psi and psi bar. So Mij is a sum of integrals of the fundamental fields, of products of the fundamental field. So if we were to write it out, the first term is where I integrate some linear combination of psi psi plus psi bar, these fields, I'm taking their average value on this line. Next term, I'm integrating over 2 points, and there'll be, you know, a bunch of terms for what this is. It'll be, for example, it might be a psi psi, psi bar. And then, but the key point is, what I'm getting is integrating the value of this field up here over, you know, integrating this expression of the fields and this expression of the fields over the region where this point is below this one. Okay. So when you normally, when people normally consider the charge associated, like, if you have a current, there's a corresponding charge. And the charge you get for a current is obtained by integrating it, the current, over the line, over space. Now, here we're doing something different. We're getting a sum of many things, where the first term looks like the usual integrated current to get a charge. But the next terms, people call this a bilocal term, because it's an integral of a local term here and a local term here, but they're averaged. And the next term would be a trilocal term. So on. Mm-hmm.
All right, those L's, are they, what are they?
This is the lax, those, these are the lax, op, the lax operator, which is a, an expression in terms of the fields.
I'm confused now. Why does it have three arguments?
Oh, when I wrote it before, I didn't include the values x, n, and y because I just said, well, L is some expression in terms of the fields. It's psi squared, psi psi plus psi bar, some indices. But now if I want to integrate it, I have to say, where do I evaluate those fields to perform the integral? So, make sense?
So like x and y are the arguments of the two fields.
Exactly, yeah. So maybe I'll write that out explicitly. So like the L, I, J, said x, y is going to be some kind of thing which looks like psi I of x, psi x and y, psi j of x and y, plus something involving the psi bars. So these fields are evaluated at these points x and y, and then integrated. Yeah, any other questions? So what I want to show is the first thing we want to show is that these operators, M, I, J, Y, are conserved. So this means it's independent of y. So what we'll find that this is a consequence of the Lax equation. And the Lax equation is something that holds when we impose the equations of motion of a field. This is something that will hold once we impose the equations of motion for a field. Okay, so why is this going to be true intuitively? As I mentioned, if If I replace the letter L by the letter A in this expression, you'll see that we're looking at some path-ordered exponential of the gauge field. So I have my gauge field, I integrate it along this line. Here I integrate it where one point is below the other point, and this is a usual expression for path-ordered exponential. Now, the Lax equation is the analog of the statement that this gauge field has no field strength. When I have no field strength, the integral does not change when I change the contour of integration. But just in case, I mean, that's, if you're familiar with that language, that should tell you immediately why this kind of has to be true. We can see it really explicitly as well. So all we're going to do is like look at the first couple of terms in this expansion and check that by integration by parts, that the y derivative vanishes. And from this, from the way we'll see that this cancellation will continue. So del y mij z y. So the first term, obviously, you know, this factor of 1 obviously goes to 0. Now, I can take the y derivative inside this integral. So I'll just write out the first two terms. So now we can use the Lax equation for this guy. It says that del y l I j x minus del x l I j x plus l I k y l a j x minus l I k x l a j y equals 0. Because I'm lazy, I didn't indicate how this is a function of z. That's going to be implicit in this formula. Now, we look at this thing. So we're going to replace this by the other terms. So the first term gets replaced by the integral of del x L I J take the y component and I integrate it plus integral of L I K Y minus the integral of L I X L K J Y. Okay. This is the very first term in this integration.
Second term in the second line should be an Lx. Second line.
This one?
The one, second line from above. And the second term should be Lx.
This one here?
The one on the left.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, my mistake. They should always have a different thing when you in these coordinates. Okay, so the first thing we notice is that here we're integrating over x. So because this is a total derivative, the integral will be 0. Now, this argument is, this is the usual argument for why the integral of a conserved current gives you a conserved charge, because when you do the integral and you differentiate with respect to moving the path, you find a total derivative. But the other terms don't actually vanish. But what we'll find is they will cancel with these guys. So the second term in del y m I j at x is the integral x1 less than x2 l I j. So all I've done is taken this expression here where I've differentiated and moved the derivative inside the bracket. Now we again use the Lax equation. Using the Lax equation, we find that del y l is equal to del x l y plus expressions quadratic in L. So we're going to drop this expression's quadratic in L because they will cancel in the next term of the analysis. Now, that means I can look at these expressions. Sorry, I forgot to put the derivative here. I can look at these expressions, and every time I see a del y, I replace it by a del x. And this x gets flipped to a y. This becomes x1 less than x2 del x l. Y l a j z x2 y x plus L K del X two. Okay. So are there any questions on what we've done so far? So we're just applying the Lax equation and dropping the cubic term in L. I'm working order by order in L to show everything will cancel. So now we notice. Here, look, the x1 integral in this guy is a total derivative. And over here, the x2 integral is a total derivative. But now we have to be a bit more careful. We're going to assume everything vanishes at plus and minus infinity. So there's not going to be any boundary terms from plus and minus infinity. But in this integral, there will be a boundary term from when x1 hits x2. And this integral will give you a boundary term from when x2 hits x1. But they're going to be of opposite signs. Because here, this is at the top of the domain of integration, and the other one is at the bottom of the domain of integration. So this will become the integral over now just x of L I K Z X1 Y L K J Z X Y X minus the integral just X of So if you've got the signs right, you know, I think there's about a 50% chance of that, then this term, you know, we've calculated, you know, we expand m in powers of l, we differentiate the quadratic term, we've analyzed the quadratic term of that derivative, and that cancels with what is left over here from the quadratic term and the derivative of the first order thing in the expansion. So now we found that everything cancels to order 3 in L. But actually, the cancellation goes all the way. Okay, so this argument shows that del y m I j z y is equal to 0 modulo cubic terms in L. But so the cancellation works. To all orders. So the picture I always have in my head for this cancellation is, you know, this term I integrate once, term I integrate twice, integrate three times. When I differentiate this guy, I get a total derivative plus something, or I get two L's. When I differentiate this one, I get a total derivative, which is when these guys now collide with two L's, plus something where there's two things and the two L's sticking out of them. And that cancels with when two points here collide. It keeps on going like that. Then in each term, there's going to be one term where I replace one L by an L squared, and that will cancel with the boundary integral for the next term. OK, so let me explain. So if there's no questions about this point, like, yes.
When we were working with vertex models, we saw that the traces of the monodromy matrix were observed.
Yes, that will.
Not the general monodromy matrix.
Okay, that's a really good point. So that's an excellent point. So in this analysis, we were always assuming that somehow our fields vanished at infinity. So when we do the vertex models, that assumption didn't make sense, really. So we always had to worry about the boundary terms in the analysis in vertex modules. Now, in this analysis, if our fields, you know, hasn't got our fields vanish near infinity, that's a reasonable assumption with a massive theory or something, but that assumption turned out to be ill-founded. When we looked at it more carefully, we might find boundary terms of this integral, which will make it a bit more complicated. So on that line, you know, if the y direction is periodic, then we can do exactly like we did in vertex models and take the transfer matrix. Where the transfer matrix is defined by the same kind of path-ordered exponential, except we don't put I in boundary states.
It's like a Wilson loop?
It's like a Wilson loop, exactly. If you think of the Lax matrix as a gauge field, this is a Wilson loop.
X direction periodic, or
what? What's that?
You mean the X direction is periodic, or?
Oh, sorry, you're right. My the X direction is periodic. The direction we're integrating over is periodic. If you think of space. So the last thing I want to say, maybe you guys will think you probably all know this already, doesn't want to say, explain briefly why the integral is independent of the path. So, given any path, say, p of some coordinate, where s goes from minus infinity to infinity. So I have a path in the plane. You know, maybe it goes off like that and whatever. We can define the monodromy matrix for p. Which kind of, you know, write like this. So how do we do this? It's all we're going to do is replace the integrals we did along a straight line by line integrals that you learn of in multivariable calculus. So we replace, in our integrand before, we had Lij, z, x, y, which is the x component, because we were integrating along the x direction, by Lij, z, p of u. And then I take dx prime x u. mean, I'm just doing the silly thing that dx becomes du d prime xu. Just like we do, as we do with an ordinary line integral. So let's introduce some notation for this expression. I'll just call it Lij, Ij z, p of u, with a subscript p to integrate. We're taking the components which are tangent to the path. So now, we just like again, in ordinary line integrals, we just insert this thing into our expression. Mij z p. First term is 1 plus integral u equals minus infinity to infinity Lij z p of u p plus integral u1 less than u2 Lik Lkj okay. So exactly the same. We're just picking the particular components of E, which will give you the right integral along this parameterized line. Okay, so now we will show just like in the case of vertex models that this quantity is independent of the path. Again, assuming there's no boundary contribution. So for the experts, what this argument is that there's this kind of standard fact that if I have a gauge field with no field strength, then this integral is independent of the path. The Wilson line is independent of the path I choose when there's no field strength. But it's very explicit and quite easy. So proof. So we take our path, and we'll change it by a small amount. So whatever my path was before, I'll change it by some small amount of order epsilon. So we're just, it's a differentiation in the space of paths. Now, we want to show the integral doesn't change. Because we're going to be working to first order in epsilon, let me put here this, what was there before? The only contributions to the variation are when one point is on this little region that varies. Right, so the thing we're computing is a sum of integrals where I have maybe 1 point or 2 points or 3 points, so on. Yeah.
Your path goes from minus infinity to infinity.
In the U plane, yes. But it's actually totally general. It could be finite path. It could be finite path as long as I change it, I don't change it near the boundary.
So
So the reason I only need to consider thinking of it as one point is if there was two points, then I'd be kind of getting a contribution of order epsilon squared. And this, you know, the length of this path from one point times the length of this path from the other point is order epsilon squared. That's not going to matter. So the difference between this guy and this guy comes back to mind. So that is equal to, well, something you draw pictorially like this, right? You get 1 point along the square. So, more commonly, the integral of the square of sum L K K. It's important that we're going to take a trace. Finally, we know that the last equation, if we sum, if we take the trace, then the last equation really simplifies. At the sum of k of del x l k k y minus del y l k x is equal to 0. Because the other term cancels when you simply k. Finally, we use Green's theorem. Or Stokes' theorem, whatever you want to call it, the integral of the square. It's something that has no divergence in that whole square.
Okay, any questions about that?
And I went to this last argument pretty quickly. But, I think it's like a pretty standard statement. So.
Can you do the last one explicitly, please?
This one here?
Yeah.
Well, so the integral sum, let's say it doesn't really matter that it's a square, so the integral around this region of sum LK Z. So it's important that I think of the correct components when I integrate with the horizontal and vertical things. So, and but the point that is to say, the integral over the surface integral over this region now x now y minus now y x. The reason is the surface integral over this region is, if you look at this term, it's a total derivative in the x direction, so if you have the two at the bottom, this one is over the y direction, so I can put the sides.
and this quantity is just zero.
Can you repeat again why the difference between the monodromy matrices is equal to this square?
Right, so the first thing to worry about is whether or not there's the difference will involve an expression quadratic in L.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, to order epsilon, it can. Because I think any expression quadratic in L will be an integral over a square size epsilon. I'd be integrating two things over a square size epsilon, that would get something over epsilon squared. Now, once you know it can involve an expression quadratic in L, you realize the difference will be. Like, what the order epsilon on all the other points, and you look here. So, I'm just considering one point going from there to there, or this point, minus going from this point to there. Because again, this minus, I get this integral on this side, and then that's the answer.
Why is this a trace?
Because when I consider the indices, think of the label as every segment between these north points having an index. On the top and the bottom as the monodromy matrix for a certain infinite path and ends. So then I'm multiplying that by K algebra, but look at what I get going on here. Here I do the same thing as K algebra, but I have to sum over K and L. So here I get L, K, L, and here I get L, L, K. Sorry, that was pretty big. I realized when I was running it, like, I remember, like, my course in differential geometry, and you learn by the path. The monodromy doesn't depend on the path. I can build the abstract proof, but the formulas don't come to mind.